Memories should last a lifetime, but Alzheimer's disease has robbed millions of Americans of their treasured memories. If you have a family history of Alzheimer's disease or are worried about your memory, you can help by joining the NIH-funded AHEAD study. It's aimed at delaying symptoms of Alzheimer's before they appear. Visit aheadstudy.org to learn more. That's aheadstudy.org.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 133. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation, as the Pittsburgh Steelers get ready for their first set of OTAs beginning tomorrow on Tuesday and running through Thursday. It was a pretty quiet weekend overall, Dave, until the Ben Roethlisberger podcast dropped, and a lot of things to talk about from that.
Yeah, first and foremost, happy belated birthday to you, the big 3-0. You're on the other side now, and you wake up with any additional pains or anything?
Well, my dreams of being an NFL running back, I think, are officially over. Once you hit 30, I think they all run away from you. So,
hope you had a decent day overall. I know you had to work a little bit, especially with the Ben Roethlisberger podcast dropping there. And, you know, I think that was initially scheduled to go out today, mm-hmm. and they dropped it on Sunday. And the reason they did that is they figured it would gain more traction and get a few more eyes and a few more people talking about it to start off this week. And they were correct. it was, look, I mean, you know, he's had some very good interviews. He's overall throughout this show. I think the last one before Kenny came on was Bill Cowher. And that was quite a good show. And, you know, there was a lot of anticipation for several weeks now that he would be having Kenny Pickett on the show, and it did not disappoint, right? I don't think it did. And, you know, I think some of the main, I think it's going to dominate, you know, the talk to start this week. It obviously dominated starting last night, and that'll carry over into the talk radio and probably even the national media world on this Monday. You know, where would you like to start? You know, the Easter egg there was sort of at the end of the podcast, right? There. So they kind of they buried the lead. But I mean, you had to listen to the whole thing to get to that point. So, you know, I guess kudos to them. But, you know, there was some other really good information mixed in throughout the show. But I think the thing that everybody's going to go to, you know, initially has been Roethlisberger's comments and, you know, really a mission that, you know, he didn't root for Kenny right out of the chute.
Yeah, let's start there because that is the biggest headline from that hour 39-minute podcast. Came about 90 minutes in, as you said, very much towards the end. And Ben saying, in essence, that, you know, trying to transition from retiring to watching Pickett come in and become hopefully the next franchise quarterback, that he struggled with that and was selfish about, you know, not wanting to see Pickett succeed right away. And he says, quote, "I'll be super transparent here and I'm going to get blasted. I probably shouldn't say this, but I mean, who cares at this point? I wouldn't say that I wanted Kenny to necessarily fail, but when someone comes in to replace you, I still feel like I had it. Like, I hope he doesn't come ball out, because then it's like Ben," who went on to say a bit later, quote, "early on, I did not want him to succeed because they followed me up. I didn't want it to happen. I think that's probably the selfishness of me, and I feel bad for it," essentially apologizing to Pickett, and then saying that as the season went on, became a big fan, rooted for him, kind of got over those selfish feelings. So obviously that's the most polarizing comment that's gaining all the attention locally, and as you said, probably very soon here nationally. What is your reaction to Ben's admission there?
I think Ben was forthright and face to face, you know, said all the things that a lot of people think a lot of times. If you put that, when you put that quote out there initially on Twitter and people don't understand the context and realize that he said that right there with Kenny Pickett there, you know, it generally goes one or two ways, and it did last night there. But I commend Ben for, you know, putting it out there, because he even prefaced it with, you know, I'm probably going to get, you know, a lot of backlash for this, but this is what I thought overall. And really it's what a lot of athletes, especially, you know, star athletes, tend to think initially, you know, well, you know, will they still remember me here? You know, they immediately tried to replace me, with somebody who they think can replace me. And I kind of wonder what this does to my legacy. So, in a vacuum, I mean, I don't have a problem with what Ben said and how he said it. And he said it right to, you know, Kenny's face. So it wasn't like he was, you know, said it and then, you know, had to, address it at a later point to Kenny there. So I don't think there was anything wrong with it. I mean, obviously people are going to be on either side of this, but you know, that's my thoughts on it.
I generally agree. I'm a little mixed, but I'm with you in the sense of I've always, whenever players speak, whenever athletes, you know, have interviews, my thought and my hope is that they're always transparent and honest, because it's more exciting that way to give the cliche cookie cutter answer. You know, from a fan standpoint, certainly from a writing website standpoint, it's not that exciting to talk about. So I'm always pro players being honest and transparent and saying what they really think. And what happens there is it comes at a cost of sometimes they'll say something that grates some waves. And I don't want to be the guy that says, be honest, be transparent, don't be cookie cutter. But no, not like that. Don't say those things, because then you're picking and choosing, and that's not the right way to go about that. So I can appreciate anybody being transparent and honest and really sharing what they think and not what the, you know, right, quote unquote, right answer is to give. But we know that Ben loves his fair share of drama and attention, and sort of those comments kind of driving that. Certainly there was no obligation for Ben to say that in a public forum, and he knew he was going to get blasted for it, and he is on the internet right now. So overall, I think Ben was able to spell out his thoughts and feelings as they kind of, you know, went along the season from where it started to where it ended. I think to your point, to his point, he's talking about the transition, the difficulty of retiring and letting go. And you can appreciate the honesty and the perspective there. But obviously people are going to run with the first part of the headline of I did not want Pickett to succeed, and less so of the this is how I kind of got over that selfish feeling and actually became a really big fan of Kenny Pickett.
Yeah. Look, how many, you know, star quarterbacks kind of go through that same thing? Probably, you know, it's more kind of human nature. Now, a lot of people don't cop to it. Right.
Right.
I mean, and once again, this will get talked about all day, but I thought overall Ben handled it well. And I thought Kenny I didn't think Kenny's feelings were hurt by anything that he said. And, you know, Ben went on to say that, you know, he's a big fan and, you know, has learned obviously more about him. And Ben even went as far as say, I wear your jersey on Sunday. So once again, that's probably going to, or will be the biggest takeaway from that long interview, and it was buried at the back end of it. But overall, it's a talking point because there's nothing going on right now, and it'll remain a talking point for. And look, I mean that's probably why they dropped it when they dropped it, right?
Yeah, I mean it's, you know, Monday, May 22nd. OTAs are on the horizon. There are some teams reporting today, but it's generally pretty slow in the news cycle. So this is a chance for the podcast to get talked about some, both certainly locally and probably a bit nationally as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else? What else was said? I mean, is there anything else really to add to that other than I mean, it doesn't matter what we think about it. People already have probably formed opinions on it, and it'll be debated for the first couple of days of this week, and then, you know, go under the rug at that point, I guess.
Yeah, hopefully that, not that Ben and Pickett need to be BFFs or anything like that, but hopefully they can have a good, you know, relationship and support one another. Ben certainly support a young guy like Kenny Pickett. I had heard a while back that, in this kind of tracks with what Ben ultimately admitted to, is that the initial conversation that Ben and Pickett had when Pickett first got drafted did not go over that well, did not sit that well with Kenny Pickett. And so it seems like they had a good time and Pickett was a great guest. So hopefully those guys can, again, maybe not be best friends forever, but have a good relationship and Ben can support Kenny Pickett in the future.
Yeah, look, I think their relationship will be fine moving forward. I think it'll be a lot better than Ben. When's Ben going to have Mason Rudolph on? You want ratings? Boy, you could make that one probably pay-per-view.
I'd pay. That's what I would pay.
I would pay. And look, I mean, if we're being honest here, Ben probably had those same feelings about Mason right out of the chute, and obviously some of the things that, you know, the way Mason probably said things in those initial interviews right after he was drafted, probably by the time they got, you know, written about and back to Ben, Ben said, who's this guy think, you know, who's this guy think he is, you know, coming in? Mm-hmm. I'm not done. But I would imagine Ben went through the same exact feelings. I know he did. You know, same exact feelings, and that probably got that relationship off on the wrong foot, obviously. And I don't think it ever recovered from that. Now the situation with Kenny is it's all these years later, and Ben's obviously no longer playing, and that kind of thing. But I mean, to some degree, they're a little slightly different feelings there. But I would imagine that Ben thought the same thing when Mason, and look, he, you know, in so many words, he didn't think the team should have drafted a quarterback back then. Should have right. spent the third round draft pick on a, you know, a different position that probably could have helped that likely would have or could have helped the team immediately there. So will we ever see Mason Rudolph on the football and podcast? Probably not, but and then obviously Mason was on an interview this past week and talked about how, you know, those two probably don't send Christmas cards to each other, right?
Which was no shock. Obviously, we kind of could feel like those guys didn't have a super close or really a close relationship at all. Yeah, Ben's issue has always been anybody that was a perceived threat to his job or status, the way that Rudolph was initially, the talk of Pittsburgh had a first round grade on him, potential heir. Those were the conversations back then, not knowing how much longer Ben would play for. Mason became a threat to that, and Ben drew that line. A similar situation with Pickett in the sense of, Ben was gone, but, you know, he was a threat to the next franchise quarterback and people might forget about me. And so those are all things that Ben probably has to work through. You could maybe ascribe some of that to the competitive nature that Ben had. That's the one thing everybody says about Ben. He's super competitive, hates to lose, always wants to be the winner. And that's partly what made him a great and first ballot, you know, future Hall of Fame quarterback. But I think he's grown up and matured over the years, that's probably still one of those things that he still wrestled with and has had to work on, because anyone who's ever been a perceived threat has been in his bad graces. And Josh Dobbs was never perceived as that threat. He was drafted explicitly with the intent of being the backup, and he became Ben's buddy. And so that's kind of the path that happened over the years.
Right, right. We'll never see Mason on the Ben Roethlisberger podcast, will we, or won't we?
Well, my quarterback predictions have sucked this year about Mason Rudolph, so I'm not going to say anything 100%, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
All right. I wonder if we'll see Mitch Trubisky on there.
Yeah, I could see that happening. He's going to be in Pittsburgh for a little bit, so there'll be some opportunities to do that. But anyway, I know that's the headline, but as you alluded to, there's a ton of other great information in there between Kenny and Ben. What else stuck out to you from this interview?
I like the little banter back and forth about the touchdown pass to Najee Harris in the game against the Ravens. Now, once again, if you read the comments and then, you know, you haven't listened to, you know, the actual interview, you might take it one way. I think it was more playful than anything, but in the same breath, I think, you know, in so many words, Ben says he still thinks that ball was intended for Sims in the back, back behind Najee in the end zone, and Kenny swears that it wasn't. But I thought that was fun banter. I thought the Kenny Pickett talking about his hand size and how that got him taken off some boards was, I think it was kind of at a captain obvious thing all this, you know, a year later here. But I thought it was interesting to hear Kenny talk about that.
It was. And I know that in some respect, people are tired about the hand size talk and that dominated Pickett's draft journey last year. And we're not here to litigate. Does it matter? Does it not matter? Right now, it doesn't matter. He's Steelers quarterback, and that's how he'll be judged, not about, you know, the prospect aspect of it all. But it was interesting because for Pickett to say that NFL teams were telling him that if you don't come in at least 9-inch hand size, you're off our board. And Pickett said some of those teams were picking high in the draft. We don't know what those teams were specifically, but that's probably one reason why Pickett fell to number 20. The first quarterback didn't go until 20th overall, which is pretty rare to see in a draft. And so, you know, that is the analytical mindset to some degree of the NFL, where some teams are really black and white, that if you're not at a certain metric that we deem to be really important, you're a historical outlier. We're not going to bank on that, you being the exception to that rule. And so interesting to see how that all transpired. And for Pittsburgh, I mean, Kevin Colbert basically said he didn't even know what Pickett's hand size was, didn't know it was a story or an issue until somebody told him pretty late in the draft process. So I think in some respect, for Pittsburgh to be super anti-analytics under Colbert probably worked in their favor of not judging Pickett harshly based off of one hand size metric.
Look, we talk about metrics all throughout the pre-draft process, right?
Sure. You know, I mean, it's all pieces of the puzzle.
Right, right. And it's not surprising that some people, you know, or some teams will look, I imagine that happened to Bryce Young, right? I bet there were some teams that said there's no way we're taking this kid because of his size. Yeah. But yeah, all it takes is one. And that's one thing that we always say throughout the process as well, too. Well, we might not think this guy is this, but you know, I think Herbig's a great example of that. You know, that's one thing that I struggled with Nick Herbig is, man, you know, he, you know, his measurables and all like that. I mean, he's a fantastic tape as a pass rusher. I struggle with is he going to go anywhere between the fourth and the seventh round? But within that, all it takes is one team to think that he could potentially be that guy on the edge. And they're gonna probably take him in the fourth round, and it ended up being the Steelers that took him there. So it wasn't a shock to hear Pickett say that, but in the same light, it was interesting to hear Pickett say that.
Yeah, and it just talks about the draft process and why he wore that splint on his hand. And I know I wrote about that whenever Pickett did the Pivot interview with Ryan Clark and company, and I got some pushback there. Why are you talking about that stuff? Stop talking about hand size. I just wrote about it from the intrigue of it, of the lengths a guy would go to try to become the best prospect possible. I thought I felt a little validated because Ben seemed kind of interested by, you know, Pickett actually doing that and all for that eighth of an inch that he got for his pro day. So I thought it was just interesting from the aspect of, and Pickett said this, of you want to be a top draft pick and teams are saying, we need you to do this. I will do whatever it takes, big, small, even things that are unusual and maybe kind of silly sounding to be the best prospect I can be to NFL teams, which to me just shows actually the competitive and want to win, want to succeed nature that Pickett has that all good quarterbacks must have to succeed in the NFL.
Boy, that wearing the brace and all like that. Wow. You know, I tell you what stuck out too, you know, and it's nothing new. And I've talked about it quite a bit since he was drafted as well too. I mean, just that interview on the Roethlisberger podcast was just another example of just how poised and I mean, if you didn't know any better, and you know, was in a coma for 3 years and came out of it, you know, and watched that interview and was asked, well, what year do you think this quarterback is in. I think most people say, man, he seems like he's been in the league 3 or 4 years or something like that. You know, he didn't seem nervous at all. I mean, not that he should, you know, just a podcast, but it was just another instance for me of the guy's very mature. You know, talked about his wedding and talked about, you know, being an older quarterback, and they were joking with him that he was at Pitt for 8 years. but he got a gig back with saying, I was 6 years old when Ben was drafted, that kind of thing there. So, you know, I think that in and of itself was a takeaway, but once again, it's not like we learned anything new about Pickett, because he's been poised from the day, from draft day and on there. So, and I thought another interesting aspect of that interview was, Ben asking him what his kind of his process is coming off the field, related to, you know, good plays and bad plays. And Pickett said that, you know, not so much worried about the good plays, although he looks at them at some point to see, you know, why were we able to get that? Was it a busted coverage? Was it a double move? Is it something that, you know, all the things that you would think that they would look at, especially in game there. But, you know, he made a point to say that, you know, I want to see when I come off the field more so the negative plays to see, you know, was there something I didn't see and you know, didn't expect? Did they just, you know, read something I did or whatnot. And that makes sense as well too, because, you know, why wouldn't you want to learn from your mistakes as soon as possible, when getting off the field there? And Ben, you know, in turn said, yeah, look, I was pretty much the same way. I, you know, show me the negative. I'll worry about the positive, you know, later there. So I thought that was a good, a little bit of good insight. Once again, not stop the presses type kind of stuff there, but I like hearing that kind of stuff. I know you do as well, on top of it. And, you know, talking about his relationship with, Mike Sullivan and obviously the other quarterbacks in the room, and, you know, says, Mitch Trubisky's like having another coach, in the room. So I thought there were several good takeaways from that.
Sure. It's always good to hear somebody's thought process and how they, you know, think about things and work through things mid game. I wasn't terribly surprised by that. I imagine most quarterbacks are wired that way, where they're focused more on the negative than the positive, and just the positive. And Ben kind of mentioned this. There's more pageantry that comes along with it. You're celebrating, you're high fiving, all that kind of stuff. When you throw an interception, there is no celebration. You're immediately coming off the field and you're trying just to go out there and see what happened, because you're going to be back on the field. You don't want to repeat those mistakes. So good to see. It's the right philosophy to have of, let's focus more on the negative, how we can correct things instead of getting too comfortable with the successes. We'll celebrate these successes end of the game after hopefully winning the game. But it's the right mature approach for still a pretty young quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. What else? What else did you take away from that?
And those were kind of the major things, you know, Pickett saying all the right things about, you know, excited about the offseason, the team adding depth with the offensive line, adding Darnell Washington. Pickett saying, quote, we did a great job in terms of how this offseason roster has been built. Wouldn't expect him to say they did a bad job. And obviously, I think they, you know, they built this roster well. But Pickett, it kind of his first comments on this offseason since Omar Khan really began retooling and reshaping this roster.
Yeah.
And that was, to me, probably about the last thing there. Anything else, Dave, that you heard that you want to pass along?
Yeah, nothing really, you know, stuck out to me too much about the rest. You know, he talked about how Canada was at Pitt and recruited him there. But even after they found out, you know, Canada was moving on, I think, to LSU at the time, that really didn't sway his decision, and talked about how you know, just you know, getting Mark Whipple as the coordinator there, and, you know, how Mark Whipple treated him, and how he felt like having basically a coordinator of coaches at Pitt helped better prepare him for the NFL level, and how in so many words, you know, he wouldn't trade any of that, you know, and how it worked out well for him at Pitt.
Yeah, it is interesting. The common thread between those two guys, where Mark Whipple was Ben's first quarterbacks coach in the NFL in Pittsburgh, and Whipple was Pickett's coordinator with the Panthers. So that commonality between those two guys, you know, separated by 15 plus years, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I would agree.
You guys can check out the whole podcast. It's always well done. Interesting interview there, but obviously the Ben Pickett selfish comments and not wanting him to succeed initially is going to get all the play here. So you probably won't hear much about anything else about what was said besides this podcast, because I assume the NFL world is going to be hyper-focused on those couple of comments from Ben.
All right.
Does an orthopedic condition or sports injury have you sidelined? Make your comeback with GW Hospital Sports Medicine. We offer services from neck to toe, including care for shoulders, hips, knees, ankles, and hands. Plus, we're the official healthcare partner of GW Athletics, the DC Furies, and the DC Revolution. Get back to doing the things you love. Learn more at gwhospital.com/sportsmed or call 888-4-GW-DOCS. Physicians are not employees or agents of this hospital.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Dave, you have some contract information. I think really basically all the details on the Trubisky extension and the details on the Rudolph 1-year contract. So what are we looking at here with Trubisky and Mason Rudolph, Dave?
Yeah, and Jerry Dulac got this out. When was it? Friday, I think, or Saturday. One of those, May 19th, I think, is when Dulac was able to get those numbers out there. 2-year extension, obviously, a 3-year deal in total worth $19.65 million. I think the first initial blanket report was, what was it, 19.6. So I think 19.65 is the total value, with 8 million of that being guaranteed. And that 8 million comes in 2023 in form of a $6.92 million signing bonus and a veteran minimum salary of $1.08 million. Keep in mind, however, that prior to the extension, that Trubisky was scheduled to earn 8 million total in 2023. So, I mean, look, all you did was shift the numbers around, right? I think the biggest takeaway from this extension, and it was I got to admit, I was a little bit surprised, because I thought in order to get Mitch to do an extension here, I thought, A, there'd be a little bit more money involved in 2023, at least more than the $8 million he was already scheduled to earn. And on top of it, I thought maybe there would be something done a little bit differently with these playtime and other incentives that were in the contract there. Well, I think the biggest takeaway for me here is that no additional cash, and keep in mind that, you know, cash and cap are two different things. One thing we always try to get across here, but there's no additional cash being spent in 2023 as part of this extension. It's the $8 million he was going to get. He's just getting it in a different way there. And when you look at the base or the structure of 2024 and 2025, the only thing that Dulac hasn't reported yet is really insignificant through this season, and we'll find out as soon as this thing hits the NFLPA, is how the 2024 and 2025 years are broken up. He's scheduled to earn $5.25 million total in 2024. He's scheduled to earn $6.4 million total in 2025. The only thing we don't know is how much of that is base salary in each of those years and how much of that is roster bonus, because that's one thing Dulac says is a combination of base salary and roster bonus. I would imagine probably in each of those years, it's probably $2 to $3 million in roster bonus in each of those years, with those roster bonuses obviously being due in you know, the start right after the start of the new league year in March. Now, what that ends up doing, basically the way I look at this extension right now, Alex, now that we have the numbers on it, is it's a 1 year, $8 million deal with two option years tagged onto it. And you basically have to buy the option with the roster bonuses in each of those years overall. So I think it's yet another hat tip to Omar Khan and company, because once again, you don't have any additional cash laid out in 2023 to get this done. And, you know, look, I mean, the plan obviously is not, you know, the initial plan is not to walk away from Mitch Trubisky next March, but you have the option to do it, you know, and you can actually save a little bit of cap space in the process, because right now it looks like Trubisky's cap charge for 2024 will be $7.556666 million in 2024, whereas if you cut him before whatever roster bonus is due, you would have a hair over $5.6 million in dead money. So you would, you know, there's a little less than $2 million before roster displacement to be saved there. And once again, you don't go into this with that being the plan, but at least you do have an out. Unless, and now here's the thing that we don't know, and I wouldn't imagine that this would be the case. I wouldn't imagine that they fully guaranteed that 2024 roster bonus, right? I mean, they could have.
I doubt it.
You know, they absolutely could have, but it generally, when they do these kind of lower level 2 year extensions like that, that's not the case there. But look, you have them under contract now through 2025. It didn't cost you any additional cash outlay in 2023 to get that done. And the other interesting thing about the incentives here, you know, we don't know exactly, haven't seen them written, but I mean, we have seen them written up in Trubisky's previous deal that he signed from Albert Breer and all. And I'm willing to bet those incentives look, you know, pretty much the same as far as thresholds of percentage of playing time and, like, what was it, Pro Bowl, I think, or All Pro. Mm-hmm. I forget what the other extra money was in there, but it doesn't look like, or it doesn't, at least my initial takeaway is probably those followed the same pattern as what they previously were.
Pittsburgh's loving these roster bonuses. Is that kind of a newer trend, or is that, am I just losing track of history in terms of them putting these roster bonuses in?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you don't have really a lot of history with kind of these lower level things. You had kind of like the Cam Sutton deal, right? That lower level two-year extension. I'm trying to remember if the Joe Hayden deal.
Yeah. Okorafor had roster bonuses in his. It was a bigger deal, but yeah. He's got roster bonuses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's got them in his as well too there. So, but the thing is they're not guaranteed though. So,
right.
And what that does for the player is it gives them, you know, at least it gives them the ability to, and it forces the team to make the decision with them by a few days after the start of the new league year. And not just hold on to them, you know, throughout the summer and then kind of miss the market, if you will.
Right. No, I think it's a good thing for both sides, but also for the team, so they can kind of evaluate and have that option, but be able to decline if they want to. But I'm saying is this 5 years ago, was Colbert and Khan doing roster bonuses at the rate they are now with some of these not mega type contracts?
Oh, I'll have to look back, Alex. And once again, I don't think there's been too terribly many of them. Any, you know, we'll have to go like the Ramon Foster deal, I guess, you know. Let me see if I can pull those up.
Or, you know, here. Even did Ladarius Green get a roster bonus, especially with some of the medical that obviously ended up burning the team? I don't know, Mike Mitchell's contracts, which is a little bit differently structured, longer term deal, but I'm just curious to see if this is more of a newer thing where Pittsburgh's kind of said, all right, let's use these roster bonuses as kind of a pay-as-you-go type structure, or am I just misremembering due to time and not remembering what the contracts for Ramon Foster were structured like?
All right, I'm looking back at 2019 in March on Ramon Foster, and Let's see. I'm not seeing any roster bonuses in that. Now, that was just a two-year deal there, and he was a free agent at the time. Who was the other one? Mike Mitchell?
Yeah, and that one I think was a long, it was like a five-year deal, I think. So that was maybe
but he was
different.
An outside free agent at the time too. Sure. Sure. I'm trying to think of maybe some of these guys that were re-signed. What was Cam Sutton? Let's see if I can pull that.
Yeah, I know. I
can't pull it up right. Okay. Find it right away.
Well, anyway, we're certainly seeing a lot of that now. I don't know if that's increased or not, but we are seeing that. I think it's a good structure to have to kind of give this team some roster flexibility and just, you know, you never know what's going to happen a year from now. So I'm all for that. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, credit to Omar Khan, but the name we have to probably mention more and more when it comes to contracts is Cole Marcoux, who Omar Khan confirmed with the Pat McAfee show that Khan is not super involved with some of the contractual stuff. A lot of that's been passed on to Cole Marcoux, who got hired a couple years ago when Pittsburgh lost Samir Suleiman to Carolina. And Marcoux is only 31, but it's worked his way up. And I'm sure Khan still jumps in and still guides. And when it comes to the big deals like Highsmith this summer, I'm sure Khan will certainly be pretty directly involved. But I think Cole Marcoux has to get a shout out for kind of being this team's new cap guy.
Yeah, for sure. And once again, that was another great takeaway that we learned, you know, in that interview on the Pat McAfee show there. The other contract, Mason Rudolph. Now, Jerry Dulac says this is just a 1 year, $1.08 million deal. And that's obviously the minimum base salary there when it comes to Mason Rudolph and his credited seasons there. The way Dulac framed that's total value there. And if indeed that's the case, that means no signing bonus, not even $152,500 for Mason Rudolph there. And on top of it, this would be a veteran benefit deal, which comes with a reduced cap charge there. So you want to talk about and we'll know for sure once this one hits. The NFLPA is so far behind right now, and it's probably not unusual with all these draft picks getting signed and all like that. In fact, this morning, their latest update only included the Spencer Anderson rookie contract. So that's how far they are behind right now. So it'll be still several more days before we find out the Mason Rudolph contract details there. But for what we know right now, it's just a minimal deal. And I think Mason said on that podcast that he was on this past week that he had other offers and yada yada. Well, and look, I thought this would have been at least kind of one of those four-year veteran, four-year benefit deals that we've talked about in the past that would have at least not cost the Steelers more money, but would have put a little bit more money in the pocket of Mason Rudolph. But evidently that didn't even happen. So this guy got the as little as you can get for a guy with his credited seasons in the league.
Yeah, bare minimum contract for Mason Rudolph, which really just speaks to the total lack of market. I know on that Steel Here podcast that Rudolph mentioned some teams had other teams had interest, maybe to some small degree. But obviously, there's a reason why he kind of came back hat in hand to Pittsburgh and is going to become this team's clear number three to start the year. And that's because there really were no other opportunities or anything even remotely interesting for him to go chase. So you see that contract and again for Pittsburgh to be able to run back its quarterback room with Kenny Pickett in year two, Trubisky, that solid number two guy, and then Rudolph as a quality number three, top to bottom. You feel really good about that room. I was going to say build, but basically just found a way to maintain.
Here's one thing I would like to get Omar and Cole drinking the truth serum on. The Mason Rudolph deal came out first, right? Or at least leaked first.
Yes, yes.
And then it was.
I see where you're going with this.
A day later, or a day and a half later, the Mitch Trubisky deal gets done. I would like to know what kind of leverage play, if any, you know, was this just a timing thing? to me, it is quite curious, though. Did they get Mason to agree to his deal and turn around and say, Mitch, look, we got Mason back under contract now. This is what we would like to do with your contract. And, you know, this is what we'd like to do with your contract.
Yeah, you put your tinfoil hat on there on a Monday. My thought was that they go.
I tend to wear that a little bit way too tight, you know. Yeah. It turns my face red, you know, because of it. But it because of the time and it's a bit curious to me.
I kind of had the opposite thought, but I like your direction there. But I wonder if they went to Mason and said, you know, Trubisky's a free agent after this year's contract expiring. You signed on to a 1 year deal, but you know, maybe something happens next year. And then boom, day later, Trubisky signs his extension. Like I could see them kind of screwing Mason Rudolph over one last time. I don't know, but either way, you're happy with the moves his team made.
And especially if it'd be one thing if Mitch ended up getting more new money in 2023, you know, I don't think you'd be able to look at it that way as easily. But with it basically, and like I said a few minutes ago, with it, you know, I essentially consider the Mitch Trubisky deal a 1 year deal with two option years tagged onto it. With it being that way, I am a bit curious of if there was any, you know, leverage used within all that with Mason.
Maybe, because I'm still trying to figure out how Khan convinced Trubisky to sign the extension for 2 years and for Mason to return to be in street clothes all year, barring an injury. I'm just trying to figure out the conversation. What magical words is Khan using to get these guys to agree to, I think, these pretty team-friendly type deals?
Here's the thing, though, that would kind of be maybe a counter-argument to my tinfoil hat. If they said, look, you don't want to take this deal, Mitch, we're going to cut you. And look, this is all just me speaking out of class here. Could Mitch have found a team to give him $8 million in 2023? Basically, could Mitch have found that same deal as a street free agent in the latter portion of May?
A 1 year deal for $8 million?
No.
Or with the
cash. Could he have found a 3 year deal totaling out what this one totals out at that would have included $8 million with signing bonus and base salary in 2023?
No chance.
Okay.
I mean, do you disagree?
I'm just saying that would be a counter argument at this point of an offseason. Could he have found a team to give him a $3 million deal, give him the same $3 million, give him the same 3 year deal with a 6 point whatever signing bonus? You know, and look, his cap hit would have been a lot cheaper too, because, you know, Mitch's, and that's one thing we didn't cover, was the cap savings with the Mitch Trubisky deal. The Steelers, as part of this deal, freed up a little over $4.6 million. Now, the reason his cap charge would have been cheaper with another team is because Mitch still had previous proration from his last deal that's included in this one, you know. Mm-hmm. There. So you would be looking at Mitch Trubisky, had he been cut and then signed, let's say, the same deal with another team, his cap charge with them would have been a hair over $3.3 million.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think he would have gotten that deal elsewhere.
Okay. And it goes back to once again, me saying, I wonder how much leverage was used in here. Because quite honestly, when I drew this thing up back in February, I thought, surely Mitch is going to want a little bit more than $8 million in 2023. And I think I had it at, I don't know, not between 9 and 10 or something like that. You know, I had it a similar kind of deal. In fact, I think I had the deal. I think I had him as part of the example that I threw out there, something like $18 million on a 2 year extension for the 3 year total. And then he ended up getting 19 point what would we say, 6'5". So it's pretty close overall. It's just I had it structured where Mitch got a little bit more money in 2023.
Yeah, no, you were really right on the money to me. But yeah, I think overall, Trubisky just wanted that illusion of security, some sort of commitment, and realizing that, you know, my free agency market. And honestly, you made the point on Friday that maybe he looked at Mason and said, it's not going too well for Mason out there. Do I want to put myself in that position next year or kind of take what I can get right now? So that might have been Trubisky's calculation of, let's just, you know, kind of accept my role, accept my situation. And if I do that, I can make still some pretty good money. And again, Pittsburgh has a good history of paying out those contracts. And so you're not terribly worried about getting cut anytime soon.
And look, Mason had it against him, too, because he didn't play any snaps last season. So,
sure.
You know, that's another thing that played into his situation this offseason.
Yeah, that's a fair point as well. So, Dave, here, Tuesday marks the first day of the voluntary organized team activities for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So essentially the whole, right now it's 89, but let's assume it gets to 90 here sooner than later, comes together. There, you know, potentially somebody may not be there, but almost always you have full attendance unless there's some other personal situation. I would expect Alex Highsmith to be there, even given the looming contract situation he may be facing later this summer. But anything you're watching for in terms of this first week of OTAs, Dave?
Yeah, just I think more than anything where people are, you know, any reports that circulate about maybe where some guys are lining up. And then obviously, you know, you want to hear about the draft picks settling in along with the undrafted free agents, you know, pretty much just the typical things that you go into these OTAs, kind of curious about, you know, what's going to happen with Connor Hayward, you know, is he going to be, you know, primarily that H-back, fullback kind of role now, and less so of a, you know, kind of tight end, even though you can still kind of split him out. You know, you obviously want to hear about Calvin Austin III coming off of that injury, right? And get reports of him looking like he's at full speed. What's going to happen in the slot, right? You know, will they show any hands at what that might potentially look like on defense there? I don't think we expect guys like Cole Holcomb to be moving around all that. I would imagine that, you know, Holcomb's going to be out there, but I would think that they've already said that they're going to kind of limit him a little bit coming off the foot, and maybe even Calvin Austin to some degree. I think
Allen Robinson, what happens with him?
And Allen Robinson, a good point on him, because another one coming off of a foot injury. So I think overall, you hope to get reports about the injured guys moving around okay. You want to get reports about who's lining up where, kind of things. And, you know, overall, you obviously want, you know, these next 3 weeks of OTAs and week of mandatory mini camp to end with no serious injuries.
Sure, that's always the big thing, or any suspensions, because according to ESPN's Adam Scheffler, the NFL is investigating a potential second wave of gambling-type allegations. Details are light, obviously not directly implicating any Steelers, but he's just throwing that out there that there could be more league-wide suspensions when it comes to some NFL players. And so hopefully that does not affect the Steelers team, because the NFL has a very heavy hand when it comes to gambling. But yeah, for OTAs,
when it comes to that gambling thing, how far in advance do you think teams know about this kind of stuff? Because, you know, the Lions probably didn't know too far in advance, right? Because they turned around and cut a few players, right?
Yeah, although I think if you cut a guy before the news breaks, it's kind of, okay, why are they doing this? And then you'd rather do it once it becomes official, and then the whole football world understands why you're doing what you're doing. I'm sure they have some notice how far in advance. They probably know that there's an investigation happening. They may not know in terms of finality and in terms of actual punishment until maybe right before the whole world finds out. But yeah, I imagine there's some lead time, probably not a ton though for teams in terms of actual final conclusions and decisions made by the NFL. Because I think when it comes to gambling, those decisions get made and they are pretty swift, and the NFL is not going to try to hide publicly this information.
Yeah, look, it's a hard lesson to learn this way. And Mike Tomlin on the Rich Eisen show, you know, basically said they try to get all this stuff across as early as they can. You know,
yeah, and there's nuance to the rules, like even because what Williams got suspended, not for gambling on the NFL, but he was gambling on other sports inside the team facility, which you also cannot do. It's a 6-game suspension, not a full year, but that's a nuance in the gambling rules.
All right, what were your extended thoughts about OTA? Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's always tough for me to think about what I'm looking for because I know I can't be there and I'm kind of itching to get my own thoughts, my own eyes on things in training camp in just a couple of months from now. Usually I just want to hear about health and a little bit on kind of where players are lining up. So as you mentioned, Connor Hayward, what's his usage and role? You know, is Herbig floating between outside, inside linebacker? How is Calvin Austin being used? Marvin Leal, where is he getting most, you know, run at to start? Those kinds of things. It's not a situation where I'm really going to, if I was even there, you're not going to really evaluate super critically because it's still, you know, shells and they're not hitting and it's not really a true football type environment. There's some baseline stuff to learn about, especially with new guys and rookies. But for me, I kind of take this as who's healthy, who's working, where are they working to kind of set that foundation for what to expect and think about for training camp.
Yeah, I agree. And look, there's obviously going to be some guys that probably aren't, that might not be there, especially the first week. Right. And you know, who knows what's good, you know, who knows if did Cam Hayward show up at the last one last year?
I'd have to check. I think so. I mean, he's pretty team first guy. I mean, he might occasionally get a day off. Yeah, I think Deontay was missing some time. He did show up to some degree, but with the contract situation, I think he missed maybe the first week or so.
Okay.
And it is voluntary. So, I mean, they are allowed to do that. There is no obligation, but we expect this to be well attended with, you know, the majority, if not every single person there. And again, I mean, do you expect Alex Highsmith to be there tomorrow?
I would think he would be.
I think so, too. And what now, will he work much? Maybe he'll kind of be more of a bystander on the sideline, not wanting to risk injury in a spring OTAs. That may be possible, but I think he will be in attendance.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, I when it comes to Highsmith, now, I mean, you would be surprised if they don't get a deal done with Highsmith by week one, right?
Yes, I'm expecting a deal to get done.
Then I guess, and I felt the same way for a while, I think the most curious aspect about Alex Highsmith now is will it happen, you know, a couple weeks even before training camp gets underway, the way Omar was able to get Minka Fitz. To me, I think this is pretty cut and dry with Alex.
You think? I think it's kind of tricky where you're going to slot him, though, because it's not like TJ or Minka where it's top of the market and everybody knows kind of where that number is going to be at. I think it's tricky with Heisman.
I think it's been, and I cheat because I've got 2 years of cash flow that I've learned to work around.
I don't have that.
If this was year one of the 3-year cycle, I might feel a little bit, you know, or I would feel differently as far as my thoughts on it being cut and dry, but the cash flows lines up perfectly, at least in my eyes, of a neighborhood where I would call it more kind of cut and dry with him. And look, we know this team and guarantees, and that might be the only gray area when it comes to this is how much, if any, past the first year I think it's probably less about the new money average and the first year cash flow. I think I would speculate that it's less about that. And I think more the conversation moving forward, assuming they've had at least some groundwork conversations at this point, would be guaranteed money past the first year. And I would think that the Steelers are going to try to hold serve with he's not, you know, top one, top two in the league. And that's where we draw the line at the guaranteed money in the first year. I would expect the Steelers to hold serve on that. And I would expect Alex Highsmith's side to push for guaranteed money, fully guaranteed money past the first year. But at some point, I think Alex wants to be there. I think the Steelers want him there. I think everybody knows that. I think, especially if it's just a 2-year extension, which I'm expecting that to be, that I think they get together pretty quick on this. So quite honestly, I'm expecting this this to get done before training camp?
Because you do wonder about the hold-in. I think Highsmith potentially would go that path, just seeing TJ do that, you know, what, 2 years ago, and seeing Deontay do it last year.
I wouldn't blame him if he did either.
No, I don't blame him.
I don't think fans should either. They will, but I don't think they should.
Yeah, no, I support the hold-in. I get it. But I think there's some of those details in the structure makes this, that's what I mean when I say it's not super cut and dry, because there are those, you could have agreement on 95% of a contract. If that 5% you can't get to, you're going to have an obstacle for a while to be able to, before you can finally get this deal done. So I think there are some of the devil in the details about this Highsmith deal in terms of structure and, you know, what's going to be fully guaranteed that they're going to have to work out, that I don't think is as clean in this. Cause with TJ, like, I know Pittsburgh held out, but we knew they were probably going to break precedent on that TJ deal because he's TJ Watt. With Highsmith, it's a little bit, I think, trickier situation to walk.
And, you know, with Minka, they had no, basically their hands were, the Steelers' hands were tied because of the moment that TJ signed his deal, Minka was the happiest man.
Right. And that's probably why Minka still got done so early last year, because there wasn't a whole lot of pushback. Pittsburgh lost their leverage. But with Highsmith, he's not Minka, he's not TJ. So, but they're going to try to argue that, obviously, because he just came off a great season.
Yeah, I imagine that conversation is going to be pretty short, though. And look, at some point, will that precedent have to come down with the Steelers?
At some point.
Yeah, I just don't think Alex Highsmith is going to be the one to kick it down.
But someone's going to have to be, because, I mean, that bar is going to kind of get lowered from, the superstars and the elite guys to the guys that are in that tier two. Someone's going to have to do that. Will it be Highsmith or not? I don't know. Let me ask you this as well. Why do you think only 2-year extension, not 3-year extension?
I think it's more favorable for the player that way, especially someone in TJ Watt. I mean, in Alex Highsmith's situation, I can hit, what did I slot him at? Top, I mean, easily within top 20 in my contract projection that I did on him several weeks ago. I think even borderline 15 to 17 or something like that. It allows him to get some extremely good money right now, and then it allows him to potentially get another bite of the apple right around 30. So he could eat it again. Whereas if he signed, I think that would be the trade-off for him for not getting that guaranteed money. Now here's the thing: if it ends up with him getting guaranteed money past the first year, then I would expect the Steelers to push for more than a 2-year extension. So okay, well, you want that guaranteed money? Well, we want to lock you up more than 2 years past this year. So right. I think that's where the trade-off is in here. So I would think it would behoove Highsmith to sign just a 2-year extension if he does not get guaranteed money past 2023, for the fact that it would give him another chance to either, you know, renegotiate with the Steelers going into the final year of that third year, or look forward to free agency to potentially get another bite of the apple.
I know it's a very broad question to ask, but are NFL contracts getting shorter? Are you kind of seeing players take shorter deals? Because used to be, you know, 5-year deals are pretty common. I don't see as many of those anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to look league wide, you know, on that.
Sure. Really. Just do you have a feel of that? Obviously, I'm not asking you to quantify that.
I just feel like the top of the market guys obviously get the longer deals, and the middle of the market guys, for a lot of reasons I just said, being able to, especially if it's not guaranteed. I guess it would all depend on, you got to tell me what percentage of these guys are getting guarantees past the first year, because then you probably do get into more of the teams pushing to make it a longer extension to have control of the player.
Right. I just go back to like the Mike Mitchell deal, which was not a superstar, but he was a 5-year deal. You don't really see that kind of contract anymore to that caliber of player.
But even with Mike Mitchell way back then, the guarantee was just in the first year, was it not?
No, I agree. And maybe that's why players are taking the shorter deals, because they realize the 5 years is BS. Like, you're not going to see year four or five in all likelihood, or at least there's nothing there guaranteeing that. So why even take that deal and potentially lock yourself up if you do play well and the team wants to keep you for cheap in year four and year five?
Well, even way back when they got Mike Mitchell in free agency with that deal, the Steelers were still one of like three teams still considered in the dark ages. Even back then,
on the guaranteed money,
on the guaranteed
first year one,
right? Past the first year. So, I mean, it's amazing that they were able to hold serve on that as long as they did.
Are there any teams still in the dark ages? Are the Bengals and Packers, were those the other two that were doing it the Steelers way? Are they, I mean, well, obviously with Burrow, well, I mean, that's a whole exception with the quarterback, right. But.
I believe that those are still two teams that are still kind of holding serve on that. But on the flip side, have they had anybody top of the market to push it?
But Jamar Chase, I assume, will do that soon in terms of non-quarterback for the Bengals next year. And Packers, I don't know what they have going on over there in Green Bay right now.
Right.
Anyway, so just want to get your thoughts on that. But yeah, Highsmith expect to be there. I don't think he'll do much. And then we just kind of play the waiting game on the contract.
Real quick on the Steelers cap situation right now. In real time, I have them at 15.3, a little over 15.3 million under the cap. When you add in the remaining draft picks because of their slotted deals and all like that, you're looking at right along the lines of a little hair over 12 million under the cap. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, what does all this mean? You cut Mallett, you cut Witherspoon, you extended Mitch, and you freed up, you know, over $4.5 million. Look, here's the thing. Even before all this, the Steelers could have gone out and signed someone above minimal value, you know. Mm-hmm. Could they more so now than they could have before the start of the cut, you know, the additional cornerback cuts and the Mitch deal? Yeah, obviously you can, or they can. We're still waiting on number 90, right? You know, if they, here's my thoughts on this. A lot of people are getting excited. Could the 90th player end up being a guy on a 1 year, $5 million contract? Yeah, it's plausible. Do I think that's going to be the case at this point of the offseason? Probably not. But I don't think this changes. I think all of this was kind of in the plans anyway, if they could get to this point, especially, man, they drafted two cornerbacks. I mean, how long have we been talking about? We didn't think the Mallett thing was going to come, you know? Right,
which seems to be more Mallett driven than team driven.
Right. But the Witherspoon thing, we've talked all off season. Yeah. I think the biggest surprise there was it took as long as it did with him. And as far as the Mitch Trubisky thing, I mean, obviously we started the off season wondering if Mitch would even be here, but I mean, once Art Rooney II and Omar Khan said what they said by the end of the combine, how could you not be resigned to the fact that, and I wrote that post about Trubisky possibly getting an extension right after Khan said what he said at the combine, because, you know, I had good reason to at that point there. So I don't take the Mitch Trubisky extension as a huge sign of something coming. I just think that this is something that they thought that they might want to get done this offseason. That would help them fit this puzzle together that they ended up getting done. Now,
yeah,
stay tuned, because as soon as we get off this podcast, they'll probably announce the 90th player, and then this will all be evergreen. But I guess what I'm getting at is I'm not expecting, you know, a 3 year, $18 million contract to come in for a linebacker or an outside linebacker or something like that. They could. There's nothing said, but here's the thing. They could have probably done that before all this.
Sure. I mean, they had Quan Alexander in and he left. I don't know why he left. Usually it's money, financial related, you know, issues, but Yeah, we'll just see what number 90 is, and it's probably more likely than not to be a, you know, Dylan Cook type of player, a low-level, you know, guy that was cut from a rookie minicamp or something like that, or an XFL-type player, than it is going to be a bigger name like a Van Noy or Alexander or somebody like that. But stay tuned. We'll wait and see.
Look, I mean, you could easily go out and pay a guy like Kyle Van Noy a little bit more than he paid, than he got earned, or that he got paid by the Chargers last season, even on a 1-year deal. You know, you could do 1 year, $4 million, if you wanted to with him at this point. I don't think it'll hurt the team that bad. Here's one thing that when doing my latest cap update that I am starting to wonder about now. Mm-hmm. You are now a little bit closer to being in the neighborhood of maybe not having to do a full contract restructure on TJ Watt. You're still, in my opinion, you're still going to have to do a contract restructure on TJ Watt at some point during the offseason. It's just now you are kind of in that neighborhood of maybe, because of the forthcoming expenses all being kind of projected, you know, maybe you're in the neighborhood of only having to do like a half a restructure on him.
Okay, so not needing to take his base salary down the minimum, basically, right, and turning that into a signing bonus and prorating it.
That's what all of these moves in these last couple of weeks, I think, has got me kind of. I do believe that the team is in the neighborhood of maybe not having to do a full restructure on TJ Watt.
Okay, that's good. That's a good thought. I hadn't reconsidered that. So fair point by you.
All right,
Dave. I wrote this morning on Steelers Depot for Monday. Always try to find something interesting as a conversation piece for a Monday article. The Omar Khan report card, short, sweet, to the point type of title. Basically just an overview of the offseason. I know that more moves could come and one will happen as his team finds number 90. And so there may be more thoughts later this year into the summer. But the things I like, things I didn't like about Omar Khan's first offseason, obviously overall, I'm pretty happy with it. You probably, listeners and readers will yell at me for nitpicking some of the negatives here. But in terms of the positives, I really think this team having a better understanding of who they want to be, how they want to win, their identity. Pittsburgh may have been trying to do that a bit the last 2 years, but not to the degree, not to the level of commitment or really teeth to the plan, what Omar Khan and company have done this year. Being able to retain the quarterbacks and Trubisky and Rudolph, I thought was surprising and good moves overall. The draft day trades of sending a fourth round pick to get Broderick Jones and then trading back to recoup that fourth round pick. It's good draft day maneuvering by him. I thought also, and people don't talk about this much, but I thought Kevin Colbert's greatest quality and trait was his humility. I think Omar Khan is as humble of a man as Kevin Colbert is and was as Steelers GM, because he's a guy that's not looking to take the credit or get his name out there. He just wants his team to win and build a really good roster. And then just doing that through every avenue, through signings, through trades, waiver claims, XFL guys, tryout guys, you know, the whole gamut of how you can acquire players. Khan and company have done that. And I just like to see that in terms of how you build this roster out.
Well, if there was one thing I could say right now, you could change that Omar Khan did this offseason, what would it be that you did not like?
Well, this goes into the negatives in the next part there. And I guess if there was one thing, it would be, I wish they would have changed the undrafted free agent model and spent more money on these UDFAs.
Okay.
That's my thought.
All right.
In terms of other things, in terms of where I'm not super crazy about it, and again, happy with the offseason overall, you know, the inside linebacker room, I just kind of feel like, you know, I understand overhauling it. I'm good with that, but you know, did you really get better? Did you just kind of move things around? Is Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb going to be long-term pieces? I'm kind of doubtful of that. I really think at some point you got to draft and invest in that, because the Pittsburgh Steelers built through the draft and stopped going through this revolving door of veteran free agents. The list is getting kind of absurd at this point. Again, critiquing the, even if Omar Khan says there's no way we're going to do the partial base salary guarantees. Okay, fine. Just spend your whole signing bonus cap. It's not that much more money. It's like 90 grand more. You can certainly do that and you're going to be okay. So I don't know why they don't at least spend their allotted signing bonus cap. I think there are some medical risks they took this year that we don't talk about that much, with Robinson and Holcomb and, you know, Washington and Trice. Not that they're super incredibly scary or sketchy things, but there's kind of a bet on these guys medically being okay, and a bet that Pittsburgh's lost a couple times over the years in Brandon Boykin, Aldarius Green, most recently William Jackson. And then this one is kind of probably more controversial, even in my own head, but just the idea of, you know, being countercultural. We're going to build this bully ball, a run first team. It's that's going to make you a competitive team. Is it going to be able to be enough to beat the Mahomes and the Josh Allens and the Burrows of the world? That's kind of the calculation that Pittsburgh's taking. And at some point, they're going to probably have to really put a bit more trust and faith into Kenny Pickett instead of trying to build this more conservative, handed off a bunch type of approach. I understand where they're going and I get it, but there is kind of a risk that comes along with that.
Are you tired of hiding your smile? Maybe it's time to get some help from G4 by Goldpa. Their talented technicians specialize in creating brand new permanent teeth in just 24 hours. With as few as 4 titanium implants, you can enjoy a fully customized bridge for your upper and or lower set of teeth. You can have peace of mind knowing that the G4's experienced lab technicians have designed more than 15,000 new smiles. You can have a new smile that looks, feels, and functions just like natural teeth. Patients from all over the world travel to G4 to get their permanent smiles in just 24 hours and change their lives forever. Booking an appointment has never been easier. Simply visit yourteeth.com today and schedule your appointment with G4 by Goldpa. Mention this podcast when you book to save $1,000. So what are you waiting for? Get ready to show off your new, confident smile with G4 by Goldpa. Visit yourteeth.com today and start your journey to a new, permanent smile in just 24 hours. G4 by Goldpa. Powered by technology. Inspired by patience.
Let me ask you the question that I asked the guys on the roundtable the other day. I don't think I asked you to answer this, but, still the project. And look, Vegas is Vegas. It all depends on what kind of action they can get on both sides of this. But why would you tell people to bet the under on 8.5 wins for the Steelers in 2023?
Yeah, if you made me state the case for why they may not be as successful as some people think, I would just say quarterback play. If you put Kenny Pickett and you ranked him among AFC quarterbacks, I don't know where exactly he would slot in, but it would be closer to the bottom than towards the top. And I'm excited about Pickett in the year two jump, but obviously the AFC is just all the good quarterbacks, sans Jalen Hurts, play in the AFC. And if you had to rank the AFC North quarterbacks, I would put Kenny Pickett fourth. Now, Deshaun Watson's a bit of a wild card, and people can have differing thoughts on Lamar Jackson, but I would put it Burrow, Jackson, Watson, and Pickett. Doesn't mean that Pickett can't be a good quarterback and get better and maybe, you know, leap one of those guys, but that's kind of where things are probably starting right now in quarterback play. You know, you can have a great roster overall, but if your quarterback can't win some of those tight moments, it's going to be a hard path to succeed in. So you just kind of wonder, you know, do you have the firepower offensively to win, or you're going to try to score 20 points a game and try to win these things all 20-17? It's a tough model to sustain.
All right. Your birthday just came. You got a card from your mother with a nice, crisp Abraham Lincoln $5 bill in that bad boy. And you want to put it down on the Steelers over or under 8.5 here on May 22nd at 11:15 Eastern time. Were you putting that Abe Lincoln at?
Well, thank you, Mom. Shout out to Mom for the $5 bill. Appreciate that. I'm going to take the over. Here's my concern, and I'm not giving a final. I hate, you know, the win loss stuff, and I'm not thinking about that stuff that much right now. But my concern is that Pittsburgh is going to be a better team in 2023 than they were in 2022, and still end up at like 9-8. Just from a record standpoint, where they're going to be a better, stronger team, but just given the difficulty of the AFC North, the AFC at large, and just maybe will you get on that hot streak to go 7-2 over a stretch again? It's tough to replicate. They could be a better team, end up still sitting there at 9-8, scratching and clawing and hoping things break the right way for them to get a 7th seed in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah, I'm hammering the over right now as well too, for a lot of same.
Now, if you put that at 9.5, are you taking the over the under on that? I think that's a more interesting question than 8.5.
Where I sit right now, I think this team, I like the chances of them winning 10 games, I think. based on the schedule and all like that. Obviously, it wouldn't take much, you know, a key injury here or a key injury there to kind of maybe change my opinion. And who knows, you know, once we get to training camp and the preseason. But I kind of view this. I like their chances to win 10. So I would still bet over 9.5.
Okay.
I wouldn't have the confidence that I have on over 8.5 right now.
Sure. I'm with you. That's a fair point. So any final thoughts here, Dave? Anything that we missed, again, from the weekend, besides Ben's podcast and the contracts of these quarterbacks? Pretty quiet, but it will pick up here as we're going to get some interviews and some information about OTAs that run Tuesday through Thursday this week.
All right. I think we mopped the floor pretty good there.
All right, Dave, let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. Kudos to Alex on Mark Gorsak. From Paul Brown. Dave and I just want to give kudos to Alex for his wonderful salute to Mark Gorsak in his terrible take a few days back. Many fans, including myself, don't have the time to look into the behind-the-scenes staff and their importance and impact on the team, and it's great to have a source that gives us an insight. No other podcast took the time you guys took to gracefully see off an important figure in Steelers history. I'm glad you did. So kudos to you from Paul Brown there. Seth Bergstein writes in, "Hello, fellows. Regarding Calvin Austin, I typically hear folks say he can be the jet sweep or quick screen guy or whatever. While I think he can do that, I think pigeonholing him is a disservice to him and a team. He ran deeper routes in college very well also, and part of the appeal of that speed and foot quickness is being able to get open deep despite the size. So personally, I'd love to see Canada let him try to burn guys in open spaces out there in the secondary. What do you think?" Yeah, look, first and foremost, let's see Calvin Austin back out there doing all the things that he was doing, you know, prior to having that foot issue. Second thing, no, you cannot just use him just as a jet sweep or a quick screen guy, because then you run into the Dree Archer flashing light on the helmet scenario that I talked about years ago there. So yeah, you have to when you start, you know, hopefully, you know, he stays healthy and is healthy and moving forward into the regular season, you do have to use him as an all situation kind of guy. And, you know, one thing I think that still, and look, here's the thing. All we have to go on, at least I do, is his college tape at Memphis there. And he did move around quite a bit in that offense. He played a little bit in the slot. He played some Z, you know, I think a little bit of X and all like that. And look, this team had so much issues with yards after the catch and explosive plays and deep down the field things. They have to turn over every stone that they have with trying to get different guys on offense to do different things. So, yeah, you don't. Now, can you use them in jet sweeps and quick screens? Absolutely. But you also have to, you know, let defenses know that you're not afraid to use him as an occasional Z or a guy out of the slot that'll run the slot fade or streak down the middle of the field, you know, those kind of things there. So, and I don't think they will. Hopefully they don't pigeonhole him, you know, because I think if you do that, and if that ends up being all that he is, then every time he comes on the field, people are going to be hollering screen or, you know, sweep and all like that. So I am very interested to see if they can utilize him in all situations.
Sure, they will. I mean, he's the fastest receiver on this team right now, and he showed some of that speed briefly last year in camp before going down. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be maybe a little bit less of the overall picture just because you're going to probably catch more short passes than you will long passes. But yeah, I think though they have not forgotten about what he can do and the big play potential that he has in both the horizontal game and the vertical game. So I think he will get, you know, use in both.
Is this George or Jorge? Writes in, "Dave and Alex, how in-depth medically can teams go into on pre-draft visits with prospects? Can team doctors put their hands on them? Do schools send their medical files to teams upon request? What happens on the visit? Just an interview, he asked. That, you know, that's a great question. I think that's something that Dr. Mel's been trying to, reach out to, certain people that have been in front offices over the years. And I still don't think, to my understanding, it's more when these kids come in for pre-draft interviews, I think it's more just interviews more than anything. I don't know that we know how in depth they can go with these kids when they bring them in. And obviously, look, that's why you have the combine to do all the pulling and tugging and put them in the pod and those kind of things. And really how much really changes. A guy could obviously get injured between then, but I guess if I don't know if there are extended medical concerns past the combine, I don't know just how much team doctors can put their hands on them. That would probably be a question if we ever get like a Mark Gorsak or Kevin Colbert or one of these guys on the inside end that we have to make sure that we would ask.
Yeah. I don't want to give an answer because I don't know for sure. I thought maybe you could do something medically with the guy. Obviously, I think the visits are more about, interviews, meeting with positional coaches, kind of getting a vibe for who you are and a feel for how you fit with the team. I mean, yeah, to combine, you have medical checks. There are medical rechecks at Indy as well. So typically about a month after the combine, anyone with like obvious injury concerns. So, for example, an Andrew Voorhees potentially or somebody with, that was flagged at Indy or is recovering from something, they're going to go back to the combine to Indianapolis and get rechecked there. So there is extra due diligence done on some of those medical, clearly medical guys, right before the draft begins. But what about guys that don't go to the combine? Can't you bring them in for a visit to be able to check them, at your own facility? I mean, Chandler Zavala, for example, who was a big combine snub, he had back concerns. And so, you can't look at that guy medically. I mean, I don't know. That doesn't seem right. So I don't know the answer to that other than to say, like Dave said, Indy is kind of the big place to do that. But beyond that, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it's one of those great mysteries that us, on the outside. And look, I mean, teams throughout the pre-draft process, they go way, way in depth as far as research and stuff like that. But it's still one of those walls that are kind of put up still that we don't know exactly what happens behind closed doors unless somebody tells us about it,
Yeah. Also, by the way, the NFL spring meetings are happening today. So there's votes on flexing Thursday night and the Brock Purdy rule. And also that, what's the fair catch rule? Basically, if you fair catch the ball inside the 10, it comes out to like the 25 or something, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's kind of laid out there.
I hope that one does not pass. That'd be terrible.
Yeah, I think there's some element that you still want, special teams to matter, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for punter's sake, you love that. It's so fun to watch a punt get down at like the 1 yard line. If you can fair catch that without a consequence to it, then you're almost never going to see that kind of stuff unless you just get a really good roll. Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of those meetings. I think they're where are they? Minnesota,
Minneapolis. Yep.
Okay.
In Minnesota.
All right. I think we got through the questions here, Alex. Anything else you'd like to add as we start wrapping up here?
No live stream tonight. I know we're on schedule for next weekend. That is Memorial Day. So we may, we'll kind of shift that around potentially. But yeah, we'll come back on Wednesday with some OTA talk.
All right. Let's see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button upper right navigational bar. Also, if you want an ad free, hit that upper right navigational bar as well, too. We will be back on Wednesday. And within all that, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
Estás atrapado en el tráfico, pero luego hay una recompensa para ti. Una modelo, la marca de los luchadores. Mantienes la calma a pesar de las bocinas. las largas filas y los gritos.
¡Muévete!
Así que al llegar a casa, sírvete esta dorada y refrescante lager. Porque tú sabes que tu paciencia vale oro. Tú eres un luchador y esta es tu recompensa. Modelo, la marca de los luchadores. Todo con medida, importada por Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.